to Straight Talk with MJ. I am your host, Michelle Jeanette. I haven't been here in a while, but there's a lot going on, isn't there, in our world? I wanted to bring to you, at this end of the year 2023, very interesting, a couple of stories that I read in this, I guess the magazine is American Essence from the Epoch Times. They publish a periodic magazine. This is for December, and they always have really neat historical stories in there coming from our history. And this one, of course, had a couple of Christmas ones in it. And I just love history, so I'm fascinated by the stories of our founders and even especially at Christmas time. So I just wanted to bring a couple of those and read them to you from this periodic American Essence. I really encourage you to subscribe to this. It's not that much. And you get one, I'm pretty sure it's once a month, and it's full of really great Americana things. Stories, people that own small businesses, history, little funny things for kids. It's chock full of really great Americana information. First of all, you know, because we all love Christmas trees, and I really never got into what the history of Christmas trees, you know, here and where it came from. I'm sure maybe some of you have. But in our founding era, they didn't have Christmas trees. They didn't celebrate with that. It wasn't something they did. That didn't come around until the German, where tens of thousands of Germans flooded in into America during what was known as the Rhine Exodus of 1816 and 1817. And of course, they brought with them their German traditions. And if you have ever watched the series, Victoria, I think that's the name of it, Victoria, but it's talking about Queen Victoria and her husband, the prince. He's from Germany. He's German. So, the Prince Albert. So the very first time that most people in America became familiar with the Christmas tree was when, Gaudi's Ladies' Book, published, and it's a woman's magazine, in 1850, published a picture of the Christmas tree at Windsor Castle, and it was of Queen Victoria and the Prince Albert with their children and family around a Christmas tree. And they took a couple edits. They removed Victoria's tiara and Albert's sash and mustache to make it appear more American. And this pretty much caused the Christmas tree to go mainstream. Pretty interesting from a magazine that started with Queen Victoria and her husband, Prince Albert. And it became, you know, a worldwide or a nationwide Americana Christmas tree is tradition now. And then, of course, the first national Christmas tree on the ellipse was in exactly 100 years ago, 1923. That's pretty interesting about that. But the first story I wanted to read was a little bit about, you know, some of our history. And I love, you know, when we learn about the people who gave and sacrificed to establish this nation. You know, there's so many people that did things that it would take a long time to read. And some of them are not well known. Obviously, everybody knows the main characters like Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and George Washington. But we don't know of a lot of some of the other people that did a lot, sacrificed a lot. And one of these stories, is about the Brigadier General Thomas Nelson Jr. This is also in the magazine American Essence, which, again, I highly recommend. Thomas Nelson, I'm just going to read this story. It's not too long, but it's very powerful. Thomas Nelson Jr. was not only born in Yorktown, Virginia, he owned much of it. He never lacked for money, prestige, or an idyllic life, but in 1774, his attention shifted to liberty and freedom. When the British closed the port of Boston, Nelson sent supplies from his own pocket to the Patriots there. When the British Navy threatened to bombard Yorktown, his reaction was bold and decisive. He said, "I am a merchant of Yorktown, but I am a Virginian first. Let my trade perish," he thundered. The only thing that kept him from enlisting in the Continental Army was periodic bouts of asthma. He served without pay in the Virginia legislature and as a lieutenant of York County. He became a brigadier general in charge of Virginia's militia when the British invasion threatened. It was very different back then. As a side note, obviously there were colonies, so people were loyal to their colonies. Yeah, they were loyal to Britain, but it was more to their colony, where they were born, where they lived, which we would consider states now. So it was, before they all came together in that process. In 1778, so it was during the war, the Revolutionary War, Nelson raised a company of Virginia cavalry to fight in Pennsylvania. He was its banker as well as its commander. Most of the funds for food, uniforms, and ammunition came out of his own pocket. In addition, he paid the debts for two other regiments. He lent money to needy soldiers and officers, gave his best horses to the army, and fed hungry soldiers from his own granary. He even neglected his tobacco crops to send his indentured workers and tenants to harvest the crops of small farmers who were serving in the militia and were unable to hire help. His generosity was without end. Now, if you don't know, indentured servants, they would come over and work, usually I think it was about 7 years, to somebody would sponsor their trip over and pay for them to come over, and then they would work that off before they could go and do their own thing. When the French fleet needed money to operate in American waters in 1780, still during the war, Nelson raised $2 million almost overnight by offering his own properties as guarantees for the loans. All right, think about this now. This guy was one of the most wealthiest there in the colony, especially in Virginia. Okay? He did it because he felt he had to. The state of Virginia had destroyed its credit by issuing too much paper money and had no money to give. Shoot. Does that sound familiar today? Our Federal Reserve has issued too much paper money? Unfortunately, when Nelson's loans came due, he had to forfeit them and take the loss. The government never reimbursed him, and he never pressed the point. In the final battle at Yorktown, the English fleet that was supposed to bring more troops was sent limping back to New York, outmaneuvered and outgunned by the French fleet that Nelson had helped finance. Nelson was in command of the Virginia militia, as well as serving as governor of the state. He was in the front lines where 70 cannons were making things hot for the besieged British in Yorktown. Nelson saw that his own brick mansion was untouched by the heavy bombardment, even though it was known that the British were headquartered in his own home. "Why do you spare my house?" he demanded of a gunner. "Out of respect to you, sir," the soldier replied. "Give me the cannon," Nelson ordered. At his own insistence, the gun was directly fired upon his own stately dwelling, killing several British officers inside. For 8 days, the fighting raged. To make matters worse, the British ran out of fodder for their horses and were forced to kill them. Then an epidemic of smallpox broke out in the cramped quarters of the small town and took many lives. By October, the British were out of options and surrendered their arms, as their fifes played, the world turned upside down. It would take 2 more years before a treaty of peace was finally signed, but England would risk no more armies. A new nation was born. Before the war, Nelson had been one of the richest men in Virginia, but when it ended, he was living on the edge of poverty and in poor health. He retired to his son's home in Hanover County with his wife. When asked if he had any regrets or bitterness, Nelson said, "I would do it all over again." He died at the age of 50 and was buried in an unmarked grave at Yorktown's Grace Chapel to prevent his creditors from holding his body as collateral. Nelson personified the closing words of the Declaration of Independence, where it said, quote, "And for support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." What an amazing story. Small, not very well known today in our studies of our history. He played a very big part as far as Virginia and Yorktown and the battle there goes in defeating the British, because he helped finance the French to come over and help us out towards the end. How many of us are willing to do that today to preserve this nation that we have, this liberty that is so quickly being taken away from us so quickly? So one last story, and I love this. This is Christmas with the Washingtons. Again, it's in the magazine American Essence, the December issue from the Epoch Times, and I highly recommend that to you all. Again, this is not very long, but very fascinating to me. It's called Christmas with the Washingtons. And this... this will tell you what some of the Christmases that they celebrated and how they did it, especially as this new nation was being born. At 11 p.m. on Christmas Day, 1776, George Washington and some of his troops boarded boats and crossed the ice-choked Delaware River to launch an attack on roughly 1,400 Hessian soldiers quartered at Trenton, New Jersey. We've seen pictures of this, the crossing of the Delaware. Rain, sleet, and snow lashed the Americans, and a nor'easter buffeted them with fierce winds. 3 hours behind schedule and lacking the full complement of his troops, Washington marched his men 10 miles to Trenton, attacked the sleeping Hessians, and won an overwhelming victory, one of minor strategic importance, but which delivered a huge boost to American morale. Few of us would choose to spend Christmas beset by such suffering and foul weather, yet Washington's choice of the day itself provided a tactical advantage to the Americans. The Hessians were mostly Lutherans and Catholics, accustomed to celebrating Christmas with food and drink. Americans were mostly Protestants who abjured those celebrations. To them, Christmas was just a day like any other, and they caught their enemy off guard and sleeping. In George Washington at Christmas, the curators of Mount Vernon report some of Washington's other holiday experiences. On Christmas Eve of 1740, for example, the Washington home near Virginia's Fredericksburg burned. An 8-year-old George and his family spent an unpleasant Christmas day in an unattached kitchen. 13 years later, serving with the Virginia militia on that state's western frontier, he and other troops found themselves on Christmas Eve at a place called Murdering Town, where they skirmished with Indian allies of the French. In the winter of 1777 to 1778, Washington and his army wintered at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, which remains famous in our history for the sickness, frigid weather, and death that afflicted that company. In October of 1781, still during the war, Washington's forces defeated Lord Cornwallis and his army at Yorktown, but a Christmas which should have been filled with joy was marred by the death of Martha Washington's son from a previous marriage, 26-year-old John Park Custis. Jackie, as he was called, caught the fever prevalent at Yorktown and died in early November. And as a side note, I live in Dandridge, which is the only town that I'm aware of to be named after Martha Custis Dandridge Washington. So, and it's also the second oldest town in Tennessee. So it's a pretty cute little town here. Throughout the war, Martha spent a part of each winter with her husband in camp, running the household, entertaining visitors and officers, and lifting the morale of the entire army. These reunions of husband and wife ran from February to June, thereby omitting the Christmas season. Yet, whenever they were together at Christmas, whether in New York or Philadelphia while Washington was serving as president or at their beloved home of Mount Vernon, George and Martha celebrated the day and the season. Like so many Virginia planters, they were Anglicans, a church which, unlike its more austere Protestant cousins, had not abandoned its pre-Reformation Yuletide customs. We should bear in mind that an 18th century Christmas in America was a much more subdued affair than it is today. Decorated trees, Santa Claus, the lavish gift buying, holiday cards, secular songs, stockings hung by the chimney, these were innovations of the next two centuries. And unlike today, the holiday festivities came not before Christmas, but during the 12 days from Christmas Day to Epiphany. In fact, Martha and George deliberately selected January 6, Epiphany itself, or as some called it, Twelfth Night, for their wedding to take advantage of the balls, banquets, and parties that traditionally marked that day. When, at Mount Vernon, Washington often spent the holiday fox hunting, entertaining visitors, and writing letters. Though normally a man who kept careful track of his money, in 1787, Washington paid a man 18 shillings to bring a camel to Mount Vernon, where a number of guests had arrived for Christmas. Today, the Mount Vernon staff still bring a Christmas camel to the estate during the holidays. Both as president and private citizen, George, along with his wife Martha, invited friends and relatives to join them for the 12 days of Christmas. They loved dance, music, and parties, all of which were embellished by Martha playing the hostess and overseeing the preparation of food and drink. Customary beverages served up for guests would have included a wintertime staple, eggnog made robust with liquor, and the brandy-laced cherry bounce, which was George's particular favorite. Dinners typically consisted of such foods as oysters, herring, or rockfish. Remember, they lived right by the ocean, right by the river there. Beef or ham, preserved fruits and vegetables, and pies, pastries, and nuts. One popular culinary centerpiece for Christmas at the Washingtons was Yorkshire Christmas pie. Using a recipe from Hannah Glass's The Art of Cookery, Martha and the kitchen help would have required hours to prepare these massive, ingredient-rich chicken and turkey dishes. In 1786, one of Washington's former wartime aides, David Humphreys, wrote that he regretted being unable to join the party at Mount Vernon, and not have the felicity of eating Christmas pie. Washington responded by noting they could have used Humphrey's aid in the attack of Christmas pies, on which all the company were hardly able to make an impression. Unless someone pops in unexpectedly, wrote Washington in July of 1797, Mrs. Washington and myself will do what I believe has not been done within the last 20 years by us, that is to sit down to dinner by ourselves. They gave everything to this country. In these words speaks a man appreciative of some time alone with his wife. He undoubtedly relished the Christmas of 1798 for the same reason, a relatively quiet occasion at Mount Vernon that he shared with Martha. George Washington died the following year, just 11 days before Christmas. So, I highly encourage you to subscribe to American Essence from the Epoch Times, full of really neat stories like that. But remember, Christmas, it is about celebrating Jesus. You know, we weren't commanded to do that in the Bible, but this is what we do. We celebrate Jesus' birth. They celebrated the 12 days of Christmas, which is interesting to me. I never understood that until just recently, that was between Christmas Day and January 6th, the 12 days of Christmas. Pretty fascinating. It's fascinating when you learn and study the actual history of our country, which we don't do today. So I highly encourage you, take that into your own hands. Study it. Learn about it. These kind of magazines like this, wallbuilders.com, full of articles and books you can read, and fill up your library with historical documents and pages and books, because our children need to learn this, and unless they learn it, we are quickly losing this fascinating experiment that is a constitutional republic that our founders, people like General Thomas Nelson, sacrificed his entire life and well-being and health and his money to establish this country. And it is on our shoulders to keep it going, to not let them sacrifice in vain, to not let their sacrifice be in vain. So remember that this Christmas. I wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we will see a lot more of each other next year. It's going to be quite an interesting year, I must say, I believe. It will be a very interesting year. So thank you for following me, straighttalkwithmj.net. And have a very Merry Christmas. Thank you.